Blog Talk Radio.
Host Merle Exit, and I'm here in cold New York City, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Well, I got a little heat in my room, actually my computer room. I call it the refrigerator room because it's a small room that doesn't have any heat inside, so I have to depend on the heat from the living room, but that's okay. Don't feel bad. I have a blanket covering my legs. Yeah, we got a great show this evening. This is going to be some interesting show, I must say. First of all, we got, Lizzie Borden, Bed and Breakfast in Fall River, Massachusetts. Owner Leanne Wilbur is going to tell us the tales of these 40 whacks. I think, how did it go? Lizzie Borden took an axe, gave her father 40 whacks. When she finished something, she gave her mother 41, something like that. Yes, and I stayed at the Lizzie Borden B&B. Oh, yes, that was actually quite funny. But before I get into that, I'll tell you that the next thing is vacuum cleaners. Yeah, that sucks, huh? Well, we're going to talk bag versus bagless. And Eric Henderson, who's the Hoover's director, not J. Edgar Hoover, but Hoover Vacuum, Hoover's director of product training, is going to tell us the use of and the pros and the cons of each. I always wonder myself, you know. And also, I am having trouble with workers' comp cases regarding treatment. Well, Amaze, that's his name, is Amaze, but not spelled that. He's from Able Orthopedic and Sports Medicine here in Forest Hills, New York. And he's going to tell us a bit on how to get what you deserve, and we're going to talk about getting some information about your rights as a workers' comp person and getting treatment. So as I'm waiting for Leanne to call in, I just have to, we went there and the rooms, it's like the rooms on the second and the third floor. And I didn't make my way up to the third floor. I didn't have to. But it's interesting the way the rooms on the second floor, like you go into one room, and there's the bedroom. And the bedroom has a bathroom, but the bedroom is now attached to another bedroom. So somebody can be in a bedroom in your bedroom, and they can, you know, like close the door. And then you can walk through that room if you wanted to someone else's bedroom. And that bedroom kind of has the same setup where there's another bedroom attached that you can walk into. But the bathroom is being shared by the person that was whose room I was able to walk through, a writer. when the writers and who's a bit nervous in the first place. The other room was that there was a couple that wanted to sleep. They actually slept in the bedroom of the mother. So they slept in the bed of the mother who got the 41 wax. I slept in, I believe they said I slept in Lizzie Borden's room. But they kept on telling us like little tales of ghosts who might be around and whatever. And all of a sudden, I'm like hanging out, lying down, and I hear somebody yelling, like, and yelling and knocking on a door, saying, "Can somebody help me? Can somebody help me?" And banging on a door, "I can't get out of here." And I'm thinking, what's going on? And I didn't get exactly where it was from, but apparently somebody got to the Rite of Joy before I did, got there and opened up the door, and the look on her joy walked out, went into through her room toward my room, and the look on her face as she said, "I'm not going back into that bathroom." Well, as it turned out, the door got stuck, but needless to say, she probably thought that, you know, one of the ghosts closed the door. And who knows if it was, but, I mean, and that's always a possibility. So it looked like one of the ghosts, like, that held the door. But a little while later, I thought about that, like, as if somebody, like planned this. It couldn't have been planned better. And when the look on her face, and I suddenly, because I thought about it, burst out laughing hysterically. Everybody was going, I'm hearing voices going, "What's the matter? Why is Merle laughing?" Like, and I just couldn't stop. I was doing one of those howling, screaming, wheezing kind of laughing, because it was just as I said, like acted out as if it was for real. But I know I shouldn't laugh at people, but it was amusing, you know, versus amazing. So anyway, so what we're going to do, we'll continue to talk about this, because right now I believe that I have Leanne on the air. And let's talk about the Lizzie Borden. Leanne.
Yes, hi.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Oh, great. Now, first of all, I want to talk about what made you decide to buy the B&B?
Well, actually, it was my boyfriend's decision. I brought him there for Valentine's Day 5 years ago for an overnight stay. The house went on the market later that fall, and he saw it on the news, and he called me at work and said, "Guess what's for sale?" So it was, come along to own a piece of American history, especially a piece of infamous American history. So we went ahead and bought the home.
Wow. And when you first stayed there, did you choose, like, whose room you were going to be in?
We stayed in the parents' bedroom, the Mr. and Mrs. Borden's bedroom.
Okay.
And I just went as a different kind of place to bring him, and for something different to do. I knew about the case. I was familiar with it growing up in New England. But we just went there to have a good time and enjoy ourselves.
And here you are, now the proud owner.
And here we are.
Yeah. So tell us about the story of this. What's this all about?
The story of Lizzie?
Yep.
Well, back on August 4th, 1892, the bodies of Andrew and Abby Borden were found brutally murdered at 92 2nd Street. Mr. Borden's youngest daughter, Lizzie, was brought to trial for the crime. She was the only one ever brought to trial for the crime. And but after a 13-day trial, she was acquitted of all charges.
Really?
Now, even back then, trains came into Fall River at the time, and people would get off the trains and hire a fare to bring them by the house. So even back in 1892-93, the house was a major tourist attraction for out-of-towners.
So it was a tourist attraction before the trial, you're saying? Before this all happened?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. Okay.
This was the crime of the century at that point. This was one of the first media-driven crimes. The Telegraph Service had it in London within the next day. And the fact that it was a woman accused of the crime and the brutality of the crime and the fact that it happened in broad daylight, this was a media sensation. And this is the second most publicized crime next to Jack the Ripper and Victorian crimes.
Wow.
So the house became a media tourist attraction back in 1892 and 93. And it has been ever since.
So tell us exactly, like, what this was, the whole, can you, like, tell us the story?
Which story?
Can tell us the story of this whole thing and how, and maybe about the trial and what happened?
Well, we're not sure what happened in the house. That's the whole mystery of it, because Lizzie was acquitted of all charges after a 13-day trial.
Mm-hmm.
Again, she was the only one ever brought to trial for the crime. After the trial was over, the trial was held in New Bedford Superior Courthouse. That courthouse is still standing today, and it looks very similar to the day Lizzie was brought in there. It still has gaslight fixtures, even though the electric lights are hanging overhead. The gaslight fixtures are still visibly on the walls. After Lizzie was acquitted, she and her sister, Emma, bought a house up in the highlands of Fall River, a house that she had always wanted to move to, the area she always wanted to move to. She and Emma lived together until 1905, and till her sister moved out. There was no reason ever given other than Emma ever saying, I shall not step foot on the property as long as she lives. And they never spoke again. Emma stood by her defiantly through the trial, defended her sister, and she visited her in jail every day for the 10 months she was in prison. And for Emma to pick up and move out with she didn't give a reason to anybody else except her pastor in 1905, and the two sisters never spoke again. Lizzie died at her home, which is called Maplecroft, that's what she named it, up on the highlands, and on June 1st, 1927, at the age of 66. And her sister Emma passed away 9 days later in Newmarket, New Hampshire. The day Lizzie died, Emma, all the way up in New Hampshire, they hadn't spoken in 20 years, fell down the stairs. And Emma died 9 days later, after her baby sister. Now, the girls were 9 years apart in life. They were 9 days apart in death. Some people find that very interesting, too. So that does also add to the mystery of the whole thing.
Wow. Weren't there all kinds of, like, theories? Because, like, when I was there, and I'm sorry I forgot her name, the woman that's on the staff that takes us around.
Oh, Shelley.
Yes, Shelley, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Because what kind of, there were all these theories, and can you tell us what the theories were?
Oh, there were several theories floating around about the murders and who the murderer might have been. It was everyone from a Portuguese immigrant to one of Mr. Borden's farmhands to Lizzie and Emma's uncle, John Morse, the maid, Bridget Sullivan, the unknown stranger sneaking into the house, right down to the so-called illegitimate son of Mr. Borden. None of this was, many possibilities were looking into, but again, after all was looked at, said and done, fingers all pointed at Lizzie as the only possible person with motive and opportunity.
And what did they think was, what was the motive? What did they feel was the motive?
Oh, that's been speculated across the board, too, over the last 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
The one that keeps coming up to mind is money. Mr. Borden was rather wealthy. He was very frugal with his money. And the girls wanted a better lifestyle, especially Lizzie. That's why they bought the larger, bigger house up on the Highlands after father's death, and father's money paid for it. They were the only inheritors of the estate. He died without a will.
Right. And I understand that, like, she never married and she never even dated. Is that what that they were talking about? She never had a boyfriend, or let alone a husband.
No, she never married. Neither sister ever married. Whether they were courted and dated or not, there's no record of it. There's no evidence that Emma ever had a suitor. She remained unmarried her entire life to care for her sister. And there's no record or evidence that anyone was ever interested in Lizzie. And then you get into a whole other area of speculation and debate about why the girls never had any suitors and never married. Victorian women usually were married off by 18 or 19. Lizzie was 33 years old and living at home. Her sister was 41. And that, again, brings you full circle round to why did the murders occur? If Lizzie did it, you know, then you get into a whole other debate, and I could be here for a week giving you reasons and possibilities.
Yeah. Now, when Shelley does this tour, does everybody get this tour? It's like, is this done? Let's say if you have a, group of people staying there.
Mm-hmm.
Does Shelley do this? Like she say, oh, the tour will be, at 8 o'clock?
If we have evening guests, the evening tour is usually scheduled always at 8 o'clock.
Oh,
and
okay.
This gives the guests opportunity to come, check in, go out to dinner, come back, and settle in and relax before the tour. So that's why 8 o'clock is the scheduled time for the tour.
Okay. And within the tour, how does she tell, the audience how she does this tour?
I'm sorry?
How the tour goes, what she does with the tour. In other words, that it's not that she's just standing there having a chat with us.
Oh, well, I have a couple of different evening tour guides. Shelley came in to do yours, and she's fantastic at really getting into the details of the case. She's studied this case for a very long time. She has she's very friendly with and has studied with one of the foremost experts on the case. His name was Glenn Rubello, and he wrote a book that is considered the Lizzie Borden Bible on the case. And she's very friendly with him, and so she's got very minute details that you may not hear from other tour guides. Each tour guide I have does it differently, but basis is we all give the basic accurate information. Each tour guide adds their own twist to how they present it.
Right. It was amazing and she had us sort of act it out. She had people pose okay, let's make believe you're Lizzie, and here's what could have happened. And then we had one guy lying down on the couch to be the father, and stuff like that, which I thought was pretty good.
Yeah, the guests usually have a lot of fun doing that, and again, that's part of it. That's part of the details about we know when the murders occurred and trying to figure out how they occurred. So audience participation, you might call it, and the guests do enjoy that tidbit that she adds to it.
And that also includes going from room to room to say what each who slept in who, you know, who slept in each of the rooms, the bedrooms.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does.
And now the room that I was in, I thought, was I in Lizzie's room?
I think you were in Mr. Borden's bedroom.
Oh, okay.
You were in the rear of the house.
I was just remembering that that I was told that there might be a ghost of a cat that might come to my feet.
Oh, the story of that, we were told there were several ghosts in the house, and when we bought the place, and I did not believe in ghosts, but I've had, over the last 4 years, several experiences I can't rationally explain to myself. So there's the cat story has been there long before us, and some guests do say that, you know, well, so they'll say, you know, the cat visited us last night, and I'll say, oh, that's nice. And I've never had a cat, so I didn't know what they were talking about. Last fall, we inherited a cat from the neighbors. The neighbors moved away. They abandoned the cat. So now we have Max patrolling our house, and
mm-hmm.
Max has taken up to sleeping with me when I'm in the house. And, you know, he'll come into the room and he'll hop on the bed. Now, I, previous to that, never had anything to relate that to. And when the real cat started hopping on the bed, I'd say, oh, that's what that was. Not, you know, being able to relate to what the guests were saying. Oh, the cat hopped on our bed last night. Now I know exactly what they were talking about. I've felt that sensation before, but I had nothing to compare it to until
right.
the real cat showed up. I said, okay, so that must be what it is. We've heard meowing in the house prior to the actual cat showing up. And so I guess there is a ghost cat in the house.
Cool.
I don't know where he came from or if it's a he, but apparently there is.
Is this the first cat you've owned, by the way?
I think he owns me.
No, I mean, this is the first time that you've had a cat. I know. Cats,
yeah.
I'm sorry. I should never say that. You don't own a cat. No, I know.
I don't own a cat.
I know, right? The cat is
the house cat.
The cat is right. The cat is allowing you to live there. It's the cat's home, and you're a guest in the cat's house. I know. I have a cat.
It's become that way.
Yeah, I have a cat, and I understand that. The reason I'm asking is because I don't know if you're aware that cats are very sensitive to ghosts. So
yes,
there's a
I
ghost
am aware
around.
Of that.
I mean, the cat like will stare at something, and you probably go, "What? There's nothing there. What are you staring at?" Well, yeah.
I've watched them do that several times. I've watched them freak out in the house a few times and run into a different room for no apparent reason.
Yeah.
I was sitting in the sitting room the front parlor one night reading a book,
mm-hmm.
and the cat was sitting at the foot of the front staircase, staring up the staircase. And I looked back up at him a few minutes later. He's still sitting like a statue in the same position.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched him for about another 2 minutes. Then he meowed, got up, arched his back, meowed up the staircase again, and casually walked away.
Yeah.
I wasn't quite sure what that was all about, and I was not about to go investigate.
Yeah. yeah, no, I understand. I find it interesting, and I just kind of shrug my shoulders, and I just tell people, oh, it's probably a ghost in the house. It's quiet, not bothering me, not doing anything, but apparently my cat knows it's here. But, you know, so, and people, yeah, have you ever found that somebody, like, who stayed over had a reaction, you know, who, like, was scared shit?
We've lost a couple of people in the middle of the night.
You have?
Yeah.
You mean
and,
they got so scared
oh, yeah.
they left?
They scare themselves. Going back to our ghost cat for a minute. 2 years ago, you know, long ago before Max showed up on our house, I had on three separate occasions. I had one day tour guest and two overnight guests ask me where the cat was. And I said, we don't have a cat. And at that time, we did not have a cat in the house. And they said, oh, you must have one because I'm allergic to cats and I'm having a reaction.
Oh, wow.
But it was only three people who've ever done that. But I just thought it was odd.
Yeah, that's good. Well, now you were there, but I keep I keep talking about the tale of the stuck bathroom door.
Oh yeah, I was coming up the stairs as she ran out of the bathroom. I remember that. That's the first time that bathroom door has ever been stuck.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So the possibility
was she bad mouthing Mr. Borden? was she saying something negative?
She might have gotten
inadvertently locked in.
No, actually, she's a nervous person, but she wouldn't have said anything. But she just, like, you know, just casually went to the bathroom. And I guess my take is that somebody wanted to prove that there was a ghost around. And who best to prove it to than a nervous person? You know?
Because I went back to the bathroom with her and I locked the door and I showed her it unlocked easily. Yeah, I locked all the locks on it. There's two locks on it. And I did it three times to show her. See, it unlocked. It opened easily. She says it didn't open for me.
Well, maybe it's to show all of us, to get us all nervous. But I have to, I mean, the look on her face was priceless. As if this whole thing, the whole thing was planned. That's why, you know, I couldn't help at some point. I just suddenly burst out laughing hysterically, like 10 minutes later, just, you know, on the whole thing. So let's get to, now you also have the museum too, right?
The house is a museum.
Huh? I guess, or the store, is that what you call it? That.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
Like, that's the part that's like the store.
The barn?
Yeah, the barn.
The barn is the gift shop. The barn is a replica of the original Borden barn. We built that building 2 years ago, and when the barn door is closed, it looks like the old Borden barn from the photographs, the crime scene photographs. The house itself is a museum.
Right.
Structurally, the house is exactly the same as it was, minus the indoor plumbing, the electricity, and bathrooms.
Right.
But structurally, the walls are the same, the rooms are the same. It's all the same house. So the house itself is considered a museum.
So now, you got a website, right?
We do have a website.
And which
it is? It is www.lizzie-borden.com. And they can also type in Lizzie Borden Bed and Breakfast Museum, and we'll come right to the top.
That's absolutely great. It was fabulous. Thanks for, you know, calling and sharing about this. And
thanks.
People. And when you go to the website, can you see each of the rooms or you? No, I never checked.
Yes, you can when you click on the rooms. It shows a picture of each room and gives a description of the person, actually, who the room is named after.
Cool. I think that's really cool.
And there's also our telephone number on there if anybody wants to call us directly and ask us a question.
Great. All right. Well, thanks. Thanks so much, Leanne. It was a pleasure speaking with you, and it was great being there.
Well, thank you for coming. It was a pleasure meeting you, and thank you for having me on tonight.
Sure.
And perfect timing. This restaurant's getting very noisy now.
Okay.
We were the only ones in here when we arrived. Now there's like 20 people here.
All right. Well, have a great evening and have a good meal too.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Oh yes. So. Lizzie Borden. Now, I know I have another caller waiting, and yes, don't worry, I see your phone number there. But before I have you on, I want to take a quick break for one of our sponsors, just because I have somebody who's listening who loves to hear this one. What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale. And you can get them on brownies.com. Yes, they're so good. It's brownies.com, and now they have new ones that are enrobed with chocolate. Now, that's really a lot of chocolate, but it's one thing I have to say, because I was just having some chocolate before. I don't find the brownies so disgustingly sweet. The reason I'm saying that is because I was having some chocolate before, and I detected more sugar, and the sugar was just a little overpowering. But then again, I eat nips. But it's time to change the subject. Because I know Barb is drooling, and we're going to go to talking about vacuum cleaners. Yeah, it's a subject that really sucks, huh? And we're talking to Eric Henderson, Hoover's Director of Product Training, and we're going to talk about the pros and cons of a bag and bagless vacuum cleaners. Are you there, Eric?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. Yourself?
Oh, great. So, to let you know what I have both of them, both wind tunnels. I think they're pretty much similar, although the one with the bag is probably newer, because I noticed this has some added thing with the pet, whatever. and it has, what's that thing like? You could easily push it?
Oh, self-propelled?
Self-propelled, yeah. Whereas the one with the bag. So let's first get into... What do they mean, bag and bagless, and the difference?
Well, kind of give you a little history. Up until 1953, everything was bagless. And in 53 at Hoover, it was a big cloth.
Oh.
Everything went into a big cloth bag.
Yeah. Yes, and I have to tell you, I'm picturing in my head, it was probably a Hoover. I remember when I was a kid, and there was this vacuum cleaner with this brown. Was it brown?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was, and was this, yeah, the what do you call it? The cloth bag. And what I'm picturing is that, my mother would vacuum the house, and then she'd have to take the cloth bag, and she would have to dump the stuff onto newspaper. But she did this because she wanted to go through it to make sure that nothing was picked up that was shouldn't be gone into the garbage.
Right, like jewelry or anything
yeah.
like that. Yeah.
So that's my memories of it. So,
yeah,
anyway,
and I grew up the
yeah.
same way.
Yeah. So yeah. So let's. Yeah. I'm sorry. So let's get back to this with the bag and yeah.
No problem. And in 53 at Hoover, we came out with the very first disposable paper bag. And, you know, and then in the 80s, bagless came out, went away, and came back. But really, you know, it's very confusing. Everybody, which one's better? And it really comes out to, what you like best. The advantage of a bag cleaner is that, you know, you have this bag and all the dirt, especially the new bags with HEPA or allergen filtration. You take the bag off. Everything's contained in the bag. You drop it in the trash. You put a new bag in, and it's like you tuned up the vacuum. You just put a brand new primary filter, and, boy, it's running great. But with bagless, you don't ever have to worry about the bags. You know, you don't have any bags you ever have to buy. And that's why it became popular, because people were having problems finding bags over the years. You know, they'd run out and they'd go to their local store down at the corner and they wouldn't have the right bag. And, you know, you get frustrated. And so with bagless, they said, well, I never have to worry about buying a bag and you know, I can just keep cleaning. And that's probably the main reason why bagless kind of took off again in the late 90s and now into the 2000s, was because, you know, they were tired of trying to find the accessories for it, the bags. Another big thing about bagless is, you know, you can look at that cup and you get an instant gratification. You can sit there and say, boy, look how well that's cleaning.
Yeah, that's what I say. Oh, wow. I didn't know there was that much goddamn cat hair in the carpet.
it's an instant return where your bag cleaner, it's hidden behind, you know, some plastic. You don't know if it's working or not, you know. but, you know, one of the biggest things we've seen with bagless, though, is that the assumption is, well, I don't have any bags to buy, so I just fill up the cup, empty it, and put it back in, and I'm ready to go. But what they don't realize is you need to clean out that cup. You need to clean, you know, if there's a filter in the cup, you got to clean that out. You should do it every time you use it. There's secondary and final filters that need to be washed and cleaned periodically or replaced, depending on the brand. Most people just, with the bagless, we found they just empty the cup, put it back in, and then in a couple years, they kind of say, well, you know, it doesn't seem to be working as well anymore. Well, they didn't maintain it. They didn't clean it. And with, you know, bagless, you do have a little extra work. You do need to clean it out after every use. And if you do that, they work fantastic. Now, with the bag cleaner, the only work you got to do is replace the bag when it gets full. So,
right.
You know, it's... Yeah, you know, there's positives and negatives to both cleaners, and they both do an excellent job of cleaning, whether it's pet hair or just dirt. The main thing is, you know, do you want to maintain the bagless, or do you want something that's simple and easy, use a paper bag that you throw out when you're done?
Well, I know people have commented to me, like when I'm saying that I have a bagless, and I say, and they'll say, oh, I hate them, because then when you're cleaning and all the dust gets in your face, and I say, no, you just, you know, open it up right over the garbage can, and it comes out. I mean, I'm not sure if there have there been, you know, with bagless, are there a lot of bagless that where you wind up in, you know, getting the dust in your face? I don't mean necessarily Hoover.
Well. The thing with the bagless, when you open it up and you dump the dirt out, it does, you know, there is a little bit of a cloud of dirt that comes up just
mm-hmm.
from it dumping out. And, you know, and some of them you have to get in and you have to wipe them down and get your hands up in there. And, you know,
right.
I guess you can get a little
yeah.
dirt. And, you know, they're a little messier for sure. But, you know, you get some positives. You never have to worry about that darn bag again, you know.
Right.
But
yeah, I know that when I clean that the cup out, like I look to make sure that there's nothing else, nothing in there at all, that it's as clean as possible before I put, you know, put it back again, because, you know, I don't want anything blocking it, you know, for the next time.
Right.
And I don't, but I don't seem to have a problem with dust. You just wear a dust mask, I guess, if it bothers you, you know. But
right.
But of course, again, now with the, do you think there's a difference in terms of performance of the two vacuums?
Well, you know, I'll speak with just our brand, you know, to start
yeah.
with, really. They both perform identical when you buy them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you bought a wind tunnel, our anniversary wind tunnel that's a bagged, or we have one that's a bagless, they basically have the same features. The difference is in the dirt containment system. When you buy them, they both perform fantastic. The bag cleaner, you know, as the bag fills up, if you don't change it, yeah, it's going to lose some performance. But the same goes with the bagless. You know, if you don't clean out the filters and empty it, they'll both. But if you maintain, whether you keep new bags in the bag cleaner or keep your cup cleaned out, they're both going to continue to clean very well in the Hoover brand. I can tell you that. You know, it's just in the maintenance.
Right.
Yeah.
But with the one that with the bag, and I just like didn't think about it because I'm in a different room. The one with the bag, this particular one, and I know who I've seen, you know, Hoover have this. In other words, that a light will go on saying time to change your bag, that it's full.
Right.
Yeah.
So I was gonna say yeah, and that's you'll find that on all of our cleaners that use bags, because we make a full line of bag cleaners, and we put a check bag signal on the front, because since you can't see the bag, it's behind a plastic door, you know, and you can't see it. This will tell you, hey, the bag is either full or it's sealed, and it'll let you know it's time to change your bag.
Right.
And it's just a simple little thing, and it takes the guesswork out of when is it time to change my bag.
Right.
So.
Well, it one of the things that this, by the way, this was my beef. I have, I just wanted to, because I wanted to know how to get this taken care of. I bought a Hoover, I'm sure it's no more than maybe, I'm going to say 4 or 5 years old. And no matter what bag I get, I can't get it to stay on. When I first got it, I didn't have any trouble. Now, I'm not sure whether it was because, like, you know, like instead of the bag, the bag that I used to use being available, they come out with bags that this replaces the, or this is good for the, you know what I'm saying?
Right. And that'll happen a lot because, you know, there's a lot of what we call generic or we've used the term in our industry, BoJack bags. These are bags made by who knows who it is, you know, that made to fit. And they aren't always made to the proper specs for vacuums, whether it's a belt, a filter, or a bag. They don't always fit just exactly right. And that's one big benefit of obviously, you know, using genuine accessories is that they are made to fit that vacuum exactly.
Well, that was the problem. I couldn't find the genuine bag. It's like now the vacuum works, but now I can't
mm-hmm.
find the bag. It's like I don't want to throw out the vacuum, but I can't.
No.
And I went online, and I couldn't find it.
And you went, did you go to our website?
Yeah, I went to the website. I had to turn the vacuum upside down. For the model number and whatever,
right.
And couldn't even find the model number. And the thing was, is what my concern about is like, hey, what is this? You know, like I have a vacuum cleaner that works. Now you don't have the bag, and now it's like, well, you're making me having to buy another Hoover or another vacuum by doing that.
I can tell you this.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm now speaking as a consumer versus the radio
right.
talk host.
Well, no, and that is important. One thing I can tell you is we're still making every bag since we came out with the very first bag in 53. We still are making the Type W, which was the first bag. So, you know, all the bags, I'm just a little surprised you were having problems finding it, because we still make all the bags. Every one we've ever come out with is still available, you know, out there for you. And one of the things I would suggest is, whether it's you or it's another consumer, is that we have over 60 factory stores throughout the country, in addition to, you know, going to our website, where you can actually go into, if you looked in the yellow pages or wherever or online, go online to hoover.com and put your zip code in, and it'll give you a factory service center, the nearest one, and if it's within driving distance, you can go in there, you can bring your vacuum in. They'll be glad to take a look at it. They'll get the right bag for you. They'll put it on. Or if you don't have one close, you couldn't find it on our website, you can call us. There is a consumer hotline number that is included with all the vacuums, an 800 number, where you can call us, and we'll be there to take care of you, because the consumer is ultimately the most important thing to us as a company.
Mm-hmm.
And we stand behind our vacuums. That's why we've been around for 100-plus years now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I'll definitely be able to help you. You know, you let me know what the bag is. I will find the right bag for you.
Good, yeah. Because it's like, I keep remembering, I mean, like, as I said, did pretty well. I mean, I think where I bought it, PC Richard and Son here in
right,
and I absolutely loved that. I went, wow, does this thing really stuff things up, you know? And then the first time, as a matter of fact, I think the first time that I needed another bag, I actually brought it to PC Richard and said, can you like change the bag? I'm having a problem with it. But then I had problems with it. It's like it doesn't like, I don't know how to explain it. It doesn't like go into the hole correctly, or it doesn't stay.
Right. It's not popping over the ridges and staying on there.
Yeah. It's kind of popping but not staying. And the thing is you're not. Like, you know, you can't put your hand inside the bag to do it. You know, you can't really see what you're doing because you're, like, pushing the bag.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And you're not really, so I'm not really clear that it's even going into place because I can't
right.
see that it goes into
place. Right.
Yeah.
And you can grab probably the easiest way is to grab the sides of the bag. You'll find your hole, kind of line it up best you can,
mm-hmm.
and push. It really only has to go on about a quarter of an inch. There's a little lip that
right.
that cardboard sleeve just pops over,
mm-hmm.
and you know, and that will hold it because it doesn't have to be way back on there. Not seeing your vacuum, what I can tell you is we're going to definitely, you know, we're here to take care of it, whether it's you or your listeners or anybody. You know, we want to make sure you're happy, and maybe we can get it. I know we have factory service centers right there in the city there and, you know, all over the country also, and we'll take care of it for you.
Okay.
I promise you that.
Okay, we'll see what we can do about this. It's like, you know, I don't want to, like, just take the vacuum and dump it out on the street and go, this thing doesn't work. You know, whatever, you know.
Right, and there's no reason you have to. I'll guarantee you that.
Right.
We'll. Sorry, go ahead.
I just want one of the things I want to get back to this is this thing, the HEPA filter. What is this all about?
Well, a HEPA filter, and it stands for high efficiency particulate air, which
mm-hmm.
doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot to most people, but to be a HEPA filter, there's actually standards that have to be met. And one of the main standards is it has to filter 99.97% down to 0.3 microns. I doubt many people know how big 0.3 microns is, but what I'll tell you is the average human hair is about 100 microns. So figure 0.3 of a micron and your hair is 100 microns. It filters all the ways down. It's going to trap, you know, smoke, dust. It's going to trap all the allergens. And so one of the big advantages of a vacuum that has a HEPA filter media in it is you're going to trap all those allergens and things that are floating around in your house and sitting on your, you know, any horizontal surface. There's germs and allergens just sitting there. And so when you vacuum it up, it's nice to know that you keep it inside the cup or the bag instead of putting it back into the air. And that's the biggest advantage of HEPA.
Right.
And it is the best filtration available currently out there for vacuum cleaners. The HEPA is the highest filtration level we can put on a vacuum.
Well,
so,
I do notice that there's like when a vacuum cleaner, maybe it's just my nose, but I always notice if the vacuum gets too full of dirt, there's a vacuum smell.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yes, I definitely do. And you know, you especially hear it from people that have pets. You know, even more so with pets, but you think about these, you know, everybody thinks of plastics, and let's say most of the vacuums are plastic, whether it's a plastic dirt cup or a plastic housing going around the bag. Plastics absorb odor.
Mm-hmm.
So you're picking up allergens, you're picking up oils from hair and, you know, the stuff you bring in the bottom of your shoes, and that's being vacuumed up into your vacuum, and over time, it's absorbing that smell. So, you know, a few years down the line, you kind of have that, the smell you were talking about, that kind of stale, musty odor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I also have a great question, because I just had this thought in my head, because when we're talking about the HEPA filter. Has anyone, or can anyone, let's say, go into like a small room, close the door, right, and just put the vacuum on and just hold the hose into the air and let it suck up?
Well, you would get, you know, and I've seen a lot of different companies, you know, kind of, hey, we're filtering the air as we're vacuuming. Somewhat, yes, you're going to have that, but one of the things you're going to have is, you know, it would filter the air, but it's really, they're not air purifiers, they're vacuum cleaners, you know, they're designed to remove the dirt and that, and you'd be sitting there for a long time with that hose trying to move the air through an entire room through your vacuum. You know, you might sit there for a couple hours before you even got a 10x10 room sucked into the vacuum, but,
right.
You know, the main thing is we don't try to make them as air filtration units. What we try to do is, hey, we're disturbing dirt with the roller brush. We're sucking it into the vacuum. We're trying to contain as much of that dirt as possible in the vacuum instead of putting it right back out into the room for you.
Right.
And that's really the main purpose. You know, we don't want to put anything, if we're vacuuming, we want to remove dirt. We don't want to just redistribute it.
Yeah. No, and I understand, right. All right. So I hope everybody kind of gets like the kind of difference. I guess it's one's choice.
Yeah, it really is. And you know, for myself, I'm a bag vacuum user. I don't want to spend the time maintaining, cleaning the cup out. It doesn't mean it's a bad choice. It's just I prefer something nice and easy, take the bag out and drop it in the trash and put a new one on and I'm done.
Right.
And with a bag cleaner too, the one of the big things is if you change them frequently, you're going to have less of that odor you were talking about before.
Yeah.
Because the odor's in the bag, not in the vacuum. As long as you change your bags more frequently, you throw the odor away when you throw that bag away. So that's one advantage of a bag cleaner if the odor is a situation that
is
bugging you. So.
Yeah, that's true. But and also the thing that I would, especially like if you have a cat, I mean, if you're going to like, you know, the cat litter that gets like kicked over on the side.
Right.
Well, you're probably best off cleaning it, putting it into a bag, a bagged vacuum cleaner, because if you put it in the bagless, then the bagless one, the cup will have, you know, some smell of like, you know, urine and duty.
Yeah. You'll smell like whatever you picked up.
Duty. Why is it? Oh my God! Who pissed into this cup? No, it's. I'm sorry. It's my cat. It's just a cat. Cat litter. I'm really sorry about. No, but no, it's okay.
If you have pets, I recommend a bag cleaner. Because of that, you know, you can take that mess and you throw it and it's gone and it's, you know, you don't have that smell inside the cup because very few people wash the cup and clean it out afterwards. Let's face it, you dump it and you put it back and
right. And
the smell's there. And, you know, so, you know, a bag cleaner is better if you have pets and they both do a great job of removing the pet hair. So you got it in the bag or the cup and, you know, which do you prefer to do, empty out that cup, reach up, grab the hair, clean it off, or just take a bag and drop it in the trash?
Sure. Well, I'm going to now, I'm not going to give out the phone number, but the phone number you're calling in on, can I get back to you on that?
Yes, you can.
Okay, because what I'm going to do is I'm going to call you, and we'll discuss the bag that has to go in the other one.
No problem. We're here to take care of you.
Yeah. In the old Hoover. Do you think people like I know it's like an antique, but do you think that people still use the really old one?
We've got people out there still running cleaners from the early 1900s. I don't think, probably the earliest I've seen is like in 1913 that they still are running and using every day. My grandfather is still using a Hoover canister that he bought in 1945 once we started production again after the war. And
wow.
He still uses it every day. So, yeah, there's a lot of cleaners out there. And, of course, in those days they were made out of metal and weighed a lot more than the ones do today, you know.
All right. Well, I appreciate your calling in and sharing all this information with us.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I guess that you can go to Hoover.com, right?
Yeah, you can go to Hoover.com, and we have all kinds of information out there, and also you can get accessories and. You can contact us through the website. If you can't find a bag like what you're running into, you can contact us right through our website, and we will get right back to you.
Okay. All right. Well, Eric, it was fabulous talking with you, I'll follow up on this because I'm going to write an article all about this. So.
All right. Well, great.
Okay.
I appreciate your time and really enjoyed it.
Okay.
Thank
have
you.
A great evening.
You do the same. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, yeah. Hoover, it really sucks. No. Yes, I know. I know our next caller is on the line. I have to take a quick break here. Let's see. And it's for a commercial break, and then we're going to talk about workers' comp. Come on.
Thank you for calling JetBlue. May I help you?
My cousin was telling me you guys have extra leg room.
Uh-huh. We have extra leg room as compared to a normal coach seat.
Okay. If I don't have an extra leg, can I use that room for something else?
No. No, that is not what the extra leg implies. We took out one whole row of seats, and that gave the rest of those rows a couple of extra inches of leg room.
Ah.
I understand what you mean. The words extra leg imply that, but it has nothing to do with having an extra leg.
I'm a pretty literal person.
Uh-huh. Well, that would be taking it very literally.
I guess a little too literally.
Okay. Is there anything else I can help you with?
I think that's it. You've been pretty helpful.
Thanks for calling, JetBlue.
Dear traveler, stretch out. We now have the most legroom in coach. Visit us at JetBlue.com. Sincerely, JetBlue, based on average fleet-wide seat pitch of U.S. Airlines.
Well, I'm going to soon, hopefully, take a JetBlue flight, so we can talk about their new terminal at JFK. But in the meantime, we're now going to talk about workers' comp. We got Maze on the phone from Able Orthopedic and Sports Medicine.
Yes.
All right. So,
how you doing, Mo?
All right. Did you go do your homework?
Yeah, I tried to get as much updated information as I can for you.
Okay. So, share with us. Let's start with about people, how often or not that people come in and say, you know, that the workers' comp case is being denied, they don't believe them, I need treatment, and et cetera. How often does that happen?
Well, you would probably find that a good majority of employers tend to do the right thing by their employees in workman's compensation cases, but there is a good percentage who tend to deny workman's compensation cases. And during the research that I found, it's usually because of one or two things. They're going to have to come up with money, or they're actually going to have to lose an employee, and it makes it pretty difficult for them to be able to cover the employee and have to be able to, in terms of a disability, cover the amount of disability. Because technically, a employer is supposed to, if they are able to take the patient on partial disability, or the employee on partial disability, they have to compensate the patient for the amount of lost disability that they can do. So technically, like, you can work partially, but they still have to compensate you for the amount that you had previously worked and got.
So now, what I want to look at is two factors. One factor is in that case where you're employed, something happens on the job, and you're battling it out, to get the workers' comp. And the second is you are on workers' comp, and it's like you're getting money from, let's say, in New York State, it's a state insurance company, and they're sending you the money, and they're turning around and saying, we change, we're not going to let you go twice a month, even though it says so.
Okay, well, what I found is that a lot of times employees, there's a good majority of them the most important thing is to make the claim immediately. So as soon as the injury happens, you have to actually make the claim within 30 days of the injury.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a statute of limitation, which is 1 year. A lot of times, if you don't make the claim within the 30 days, your company has the right to pretty much decide not to proceed with the workman's compensation, in which you would try to go to the workman's compensation board to appeal this, or in other states it's called the industrial commission. So you would actually go to them, and you can appeal the case for arbitration. What else?
You get a lawyer, too.
Exactly. The most important thing is to have a competent lawyer that actually works with workman's compensation cases, who's used to doing this, these type of litigation procedures. So.
Yeah. So now, in doing this though, like, I guess what there is a point. I mean, you first, as I said, you're first battling to get it, and then they'll turn around and workers' comp will sort of, like, there's two kinds of compensation. One is the monetary compensation that you'll get, you know, per week, and then there's the bills. In other words, the medical bills, or the
therapy sessions. Yeah, your employer is required to pay 66% of your weekly income, and they're supposed to pay, depending on the state, pretty much 100% of your medical bills, whether or not it was as a result of a recurrent injury, like a repetitive process that can cause damage, such as carpal tunnel syndrome, or a slip and fall on the job resulting in a fracture. They're supposed to pay for the surgical procedure. They're supposed to pay for the rehab following the procedure. And they're also supposed to pay what's called loss of function. And sometimes if you lose function due to an injury, they're supposed to give you a percentage in terms of, let's just say you lost the full function of your shoulder, and your range of motion is decreased as a result of the injury, despite physical therapy and despite surgery, you'll get a lump sum of money in regards to that, depending on the percentage of loss.
Right.
So.
So now, in terms of, like for instance, now workers' comp is paying, and they, you know, the decision has been made. Let's say that you can go to, especially, I guess, I would imagine back problems are pretty persistent. I mean, they don't necessarily go away.
Yeah. Depending on how much percentage of loss due to the back problem injury, you can get a either a lump sum or continued workman's compensation benefits, and pretty much that's determined, you know, by loss, whether or not you've lost, like I said, there's been a loss or
right.
a huge amount of loss.
But then what happens is that there seems to be, I've heard enough cases of people saying that workers' comp will turn around, let's say, and they'll, you know, like they're saying, well, you can go to see a chiropractor once per month, or as you have the problem, and then they turn around and say, well, we changed them on, we're not paying for it.
Yeah, well, a lot of times, a lot of companies have their own physician that tend to evaluate the person who is claiming workman's compensation, and sometimes the physician doesn't have the patient's or the employee's best interest in mind, and tend to gear them in different directions. So it's almost important for the patient to be truly honest in regards to what's going on with what happened and what type of injury it was. Yeah, it all comes down to pretty much really documenting everything in the beginning. The most important thing is to make sure that if there was an injury, you have witnesses, you know, and to be able to tell, to document it, and even contact the Workmen's Comp Board or the Industrial Commission following the injury to make sure the paperwork is being processed from the initial injury correctly, so that you can continue to collect workman's compensation if in fact needed.
Right. Now, I don't know about, like, you know, since we live in New York State, and New York State is just one basic company that's shelling out the money. New York
No, actually.
State,
No. Actually, workman's compensation, the majority of workman's compensation is paid by the employers. So usually the employer has an insurance company, or they've discussed with the employee that the employee can become self-insured for workman's compensation during the application process or with the hiring process of that employee. So the majority of workman's compensation cases are actually paid out by the employee. I mean the employer, rather.
Okay, so in other words, like the company, like called State Insurance Company, is like, was the company that the employer uses.
Is using, correct, to cover the workman's compensation.
Okay, I get it. I just got the sense from hearing that...
You thought it was under the New York State or a state
that has a separate...
No, not necessarily. If you work for the state of New York, they may have, you know, their own insurance company that works with them, but it's really the employer that is paying out, you know, hired the insurance company to cover
them. So is it up to, I mean, can the employer turn around and say, you know, they're going through their books and whatever, and they say, too long a time has gone by, we don't want to pay this.
You know what? The sad part is they can, and the most important part is you have full documentation and have been following everything right to show that you need to have the rehab or you can't fully participate in your normal duties that you were doing beforehand because of an injury or, you know, result of injury.
So in other words, it's not necessary that the insurance company is making the decisions versus, in other words, they're making decisions based on feedback they're getting from the employer.
Well, not necessarily the employer, but it could be the physician that was hired by the employer or, you know, that evaluated the patient, almost like a third party or a second party physician.
Right.
You see. So the important thing is you know, just – definitely seek a good physician to evaluate you and really determine, you know, what type of injuries you have and the type of rehab you need. And that's where Able Orthopedics would come into play.
Right, yes. Now, I'm curious about something then. Suppose the employer, you know, who originally, you know, set this up, you know, where the injury was, what if they go out of business? What happens with
if they go out of business, depending on whether or not the insurance company would continue paying for the I'm not too sure, to be honest with you, in terms of that.
Yeah.
I think that's more legal aspects of it.
Yeah.
But I would think that somebody would have to cover, you know, the workman's compensation, whether it be the insurance company that the employer had originally used. I don't think that tie would be automatically separated. And in the worst case scenario, if they decided not to, you could always appeal the case or you know, bring it to court, and that's where hiring a good attorney would help out, you know, somebody with experience, with workman's comp experience.
But I also think people need to know that they have workers' comp advocates.
Yeah, exactly. There are workman's comp advocates, and there are some websites that actually that you can go to that have advocates that will come in to your aid and help you through this process, because it is a difficult process. I mean, it's difficult, you know, for everyone.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I had I was chatting with somebody, and they were actually saying they could actually tell you what forms to use, and that you can actually go on the website and download forms if you want to. Or let's say you know, like you as the one who's taking care of a patient, if you're not sure what the form is, you can get the form online even.
Okay.
Which I think is, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, that's great. I mean, the thing about evaluating the patients for workman's compensation is that, you know, that whole second party evaluation, I mean, you could have a patient that goes to be evaluated by their employee health department, and, you know, the employee health department doctor or physician assistant evaluates the patient and says, you know what, you're okay, you have a small contusion or you have a sprain, and, you know, the patient continues to have pain, you know, and says, you know what, let me go get evaluated by another physician, or, you know, you get sent for an MRI and you end up with a rotator cuff tear from the injury that you had at work.
Right.
So, you know, the other physician may have said you were okay and to resume full normal duties, and your duties entail you cleaning, you know, 6-story windows or, you know, and or lifting heavy bags, which you can't do. And that's the important part of getting a good physician, you know, to evaluate you and make sure that you're, you know, you're not going to do anything that's going to further harm you, you know.
What are the most common ones, cases that you see coming in to your office?
We see a good majority of shoulder injuries from slips and falls or heavy lifting injuries. We see a lot of rotator cuff tears, or we see a lot of slips and falls resulting in meniscal tears of the knees. There's a lot of carpal tunnel from active use of typing. A lot of low back pain as a result of slip and falls or sprains with disc herniations. Pretty much Able Orthopedic sees everything. We actually, you know, fractures, fracture dislocations. Dr. Mehran Manuel is excellent at trauma as well. You know, so, you know, in the time that I've been there, I've seen a good majority of patients that actually tend to do really well with general, you know, physical therapy, post-operative procedures with physical, you know, operative procedures with post-op physical therapy, you know, just physical therapy management. The team that we have is a good team, and we seem to really care for a lot of the patients that come in with a lot of workman's comp issues. You have some physicians who don't believe in workman's comp, and, you know, of course, they think, oh, you're just trying to get out of work. But a good majority of patients are not. You'll have, like, one or two who obviously have nothing wrong with them and they're trying to get over on the system. But we weed those patients out.
Yes. So, in other words, the ones that that say, I need it, and then turn around and, you know, while they're on workers' comp, you catch them like
Yeah, the ones you see on
doing,
you know, I Caught Him TV or something like that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but you'd be surprised. A lot of patients really are ill, you know,
yeah.
And they really do have injuries that necessitate, you know, surgery or rehab. And it's hard enough that they have to care for themselves or take care of this injury to have to worry about it being paid for.
Right.
By workman's compensation. And there's plenty of cases where it takes so long for workman's compensation to cover them that a lot of patients you see generally use up their entire savings during the time that they've been on workman's compensation. It's surprising, but, you know, that's some of the information I found. So,
I'm not sure if you know this, but, like, for instance, and, you know, with the, I guess cost of living. I mean, if you're on workers' comp and they're paying you, oh, I don't know, let's say if they're paying you $150 a week or something like that, if enough time goes by, if the years go by, do they have to, you know, come up with more money because you can't live on that or you can't?
Does workman's compensation come up with more money?
I think
it's pretty much it's based on your active income, what you were making previously before, and the percentage of that, and it also is loss function. If you lose the function of your arm or your leg,
right.
The percentage of that would definitely
right.
Be a reason for more money in that sense. But I don't think that with inflation, you're going to get more money because there's more cost.
Care.
They're not going to. That I don't think that actually has anything to do with it.
So now at the Able Orthopedic now, are you doing things there like the therapy, or it's basically the evaluations? Is that what?
Able Orthopedics is general orthopedic sport and sports medicine facility. We do everything from evaluating the patients, seeing them, determining whether or not the patient needs surgical procedure or not. If patient comes in with a fracture, we evaluate them, see if they need closed treatment or casting. I mean, it's pretty much orthopedics, everything, 100%.
But I'm saying, in terms of the work itself, are you sending some? In other words, you're sending the patients to someplace else.
Yeah. After we evaluate the patients, right. And if they do need physical therapy, we do send them to a couple of physical therapy centers that we have that we work directly with. We have a bunch of therapy centers. Well, the patient could actually go to any therapy center that they. Feel fit or choose. A lot of times we try to make it convenient for the patient so that they could go to a therapy center near their home. So.
Right. So it's not like somebody's coming in if they have a shoulder problem, you're not going to do the surgery there.
No, right. No. It's not a surgical center. We're actually, we work out of North Shore Hospital. So the surgery will be performed at North Shore Hospital or one of the surgical centers that we work with. So we don't do surgical cases there.
Right. So. One of the things I thought that was interesting about your place, and I'm sure it's probably been too long a time since I've done x-rays like this, I guess, is that now you do x-rays and you don't even have to wait.
Yeah, everything's
right onto
digital
a computer
now.
And somebody can see it right afterwards.
Yeah.
How new is that?
It's actually fairly new, and pretty much only the best orthopedic centers and all universities have them right now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty great. It makes things really convenient, not only for us but for the x-ray technician. They don't have to change slides and we don't have to. Everything's digital. We can put it on a CD for you to take home with you if you'd like, and it makes things a lot easier and a lot faster to read the radiographs. So I'll have the X-ray taken in the X-ray room, and I'll be sitting in the exam room and be able to look at the radiograph before the patient's even back in the room. So it's great. It definitely is convenient.
Oh yeah. So in other words, you could if you say, well, here's a CD of the X-rays, bring it to your whatever.
Yeah, that would actually. Yeah, I mean, bring it to your employee, or your employer rather.
Wherever it is that you have to go to, like wherever you're going to get the therapy or something.
Exactly. Exactly.
So it's easier to do in terms of records,
Exactly.
Wow.
It's definitely a lot easier, and before we used to put the x-rays in these huge sheets, and we
right.
would line them up against the walls, and it was almost impossible to find radiographs and MRIs, and now, I mean, you have everything in a small folder on the computer,
right.
So technology has really changed things a lot, and it's going to continue to change. There's people are doing CT scans with 3D recons and MRIs that are sliced thinner than they've ever been sliced before to evaluate individual parts of the anatomy. So, I mean, things are really picking up in terms of technology, which is great for us.
Wow. Can, and I know this has nothing to do with it, but I mean, I understand, like, breast examinations, you can, in other words, instead of, like, having your breasts, like, flattened.
Mammograms, there are different type of mammograms now, yeah, that are less uncomfortable than your conventional squeeze, you know, the breast tissue, and definitely things are definitely getting easier for the patients, you know, and that's what we tried to do, make it convenient and easy and as harmless as possible for our patients.
Yeah. So now, do you guys got a website?
Actually, yes, we do. Our website is www.ableorthopedic.com.
Okay.
And our address is 7655 Austin Street in Forest Hills, New York.
Great. Fabulous. I want to thank you so much. Is there anything – oh, I'm sorry. Is there, like, anything you want to add?
No. You know, I definitely look forward to coming back on the show and talking about any type of orthopedic injuries or sports medicine injuries.
We might do that about at some point. I want to talk about sports injuries, particularly sports injuries that women encounter.
Okay.
So,
well, to be honest, there aren't too many different women male injuries, but there are definitely injuries that sports related injuries that football players or basketball players specifically get more than, you know, golfers.
That's the one. That's the one. Because we're going to talk with the New York Sharks around.
Definitely. Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
We'll kind of get into that. Well, again, I want to thank you
for having me.
For sharing this information with us. And I shall be in touch with you.
Definitely. I appreciate you having me on.
Have a great evening.
You too. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye. Yes. So now my phone is going to drop dead here. Oh, I guess I should put this, let's see. I'm going to. Gotta put this on speakerphone. It's gonna make a noise. Yeah. Okay. I'm on. It's gonna run out. So we got like 2 minutes to go. But anyway, so next week, I'm gonna do the show on Wednesday evening next week because not that you know that I don't want to do the show on Thanksgiving is that nobody wants to come on the show. At Thanksgiving, they're all busy. I'm allergic to turkey, so I don't really give a shit about Thanksgiving. And I just want to tell people also, that as far as Thanksgiving, I think I don't know if anybody has realized that if it had been instead of a turkey, well, I don't know. We'll get to what the history of the turkey, but if it had been a bobcat instead of a turkey, we'd all be eating pussy for dinner. So with that, I will leave you and see you and talk to you next week. I probably shouldn't have said that. I think it upset Mallory. Say hello to everyone. Say goodbye to everyone. I know you're the host of the show. I understand. I got it.